Good morning or afternoon, and thank you for standing by. I have opened everyone's line, so we do ask that you utilize the mute button on your phone during the presentation. If you do not have a mute button, you may press star 6 now to mute. Star 6 work. One moment. And just so you know, star 6 works as a toggle, so if you do need to speak, press star 6 as well. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect. Now I'd like to introduce Steve Knowlton. Sir, you may begin.
Thanks, Tim. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the BuildForge open mic that will be talking about installation and migration specifically to BuildForge. The purpose of this event is to provide everyone an opportunity to casually share knowledge and experience on this specific topic. All mics have been unmuted, so feel free to jump in at any time and ask any question or talk about any particular experience you might have had with BuildForge installations or migrations. We simply ask that everybody, when anybody does speak, that if you could just please introduce yourself and the company you work for so that everybody on the call is familiar with who you might be. Please be aware, again, as noted, that this is being recorded and will be posted on our website for future reference. Lastly, it may come to pass that a particular question or discussion could be better addressed offline through a PMR. So just in the interest of time, if we get the sense that we're really going deep into a technical pre-existing situation that you might have, we might pause that conversation and just open a PMR for you and take that offline. We also have a number of BuildForge developers, in addition to the technical leads that are going to help me on this call. They could chime in at any given time when a particular question is raised. I would just ask also that if that is the case, that that particular BuildForge developer, just introduce yourself and your role within IBM. So at this time, what I'd like to do is introduce Chris Thor and Mike Parson. These two individuals are the technical support leads on my team, and what they're going to do is kind of just go into a little bit of a dive into the kind of experiences that we've been hearing from clients so far to date with regards to migrations and installations, and then from there, just kind of open it up to the floor with regards to any clients on the call that might want to have any questions or just talk about the subject in general. So actually, before I introduce, ask Chris and Mike to take this take it from here, can I ask if there's any clients on the call, and if so, could you introduce yourself and tell us what company you work for?
Eric Anderson with Adobe Systems.
Hi, Eric.
Hi, guys.
We have Jeremy Davis, Tamara Waters, Vishal Patel, and we're with State Farm.
Excellent. Welcome to the call.
Sridevi Chandran from State Farm.
Excellent. Welcome to the call.
Hey, Nalini and Elizabeth from
Welcome
State Farm.
Krupa from SSA.
Hello and welcome. Okay, it sounds like we have plenty to get going, and I'm sure some others will join throughout the call. So, again, I'm going to introduce Chris Thor at this point and turn it over to him.
All right. So we're going to talk at a high level about migration, things that you really should do, things that you should plan for, best practices, potential pitfalls you might run into, and I guess a little bit of the terminology that we use during the migration process would be good to cover. Specifically, we ask that everybody plan for their migration. It is very, very complex, much more so than it has been in the past. There are a few gotchas that you just have to prepare for, you have to plan for, you have to have the space needed, things of that nature, possibly a dry run of the copy of your database before doing the actual migration so that you can see what our queries won't catch in terms of perhaps database inconsistency in a lot of. Certainly plan your table space size needs. We've run into a couple of situations where the table space simply didn't have enough room and it halted migration at a very, very unfortunate place. Certainly read the installation docs. It's pretty detailed read, but it's very, very important that you read those, that documentation for your particular database, for your particular scenario. Pretty much all of them are covered, all the way back to 7.0 going up to 7.1.1. It's very, very important that you have a good understanding about what's going to take place and what's going to happen during this migration process. And the documentation highlights it very, very effectively. Certainly, figure out what you actually need in terms of your migration. Do you need your historical data, or do you just need config data? Historical data itself, if you do decide that you need that and you can't go without it, it takes a long time. That needs to be planned for. There's certainly the option of doing it offline. That particular process is detailed in the documentation. Or you can do it online, which, generally speaking, is not the way we recommend doing it. It's slow, it takes a long time, and it's one of those things that, generally speaking, for a build system, you don't want to have happen in an online database or an online used database by Buildforce currently. It's going to slow everything down. There are, of course, pitfalls that we've run into, specifically our use of the term schema and a database's use of the term schema are very, very different. Specifically, a database schema is a container for all of the stuff that that particular schema is going to hold, tables, indexes, constraints, things of that nature. The Buildforce schema holds all the DDL, or what we use to create the tables, what we use to create the indexes, the SQL syntax, ultimately. So they're two very different things. One's a container, the other one just holds how do I make this stuff type data. When we say schemas need to be in the same database, and that's a limitation of databases themselves. We ultimately are going to be making quite a few tables so that we can do the migration process without touching your old data. Your old data will be intact. We don't delete tables. We don't modify tables. We don't even touch them. To do that, we need to make new tables. To transfer it over to your new database, we need to use a new schema, ultimately. All this is outlined in the docs, but it can be a little bit confusing because of the dual-purpose word schema. So it's important that we understand the difference between what a Buildforce schema is and what a database schema is. You need the grant privilege. If you don't have the grant privilege, you're not going to be able to give the grants or the permissions to the user or the new user or the old user, whichever user you're using at this point in time in your Buildforce conf or your Migrate conf or things of that nature, and the database or the migration won't continue. I've seen that be very, very important on MySQL. Make sure you have enough redo space or undo log space or archive log space, whichever database you're using, whatever they decide to call it. You need to have enough space to make this process happen. It's going to go and it's going to grab a lot of data and transfer a lot of stuff around. That's pretty much it for a high-level overview.
From the Buildforge engineering or development side, is there anything else anybody at a high level might want to just comment on with regards to what Chris just covered?
This is Jason Todd, the installation developer. always, before you do any kind of work with your database, you should obviously back it up. I don't know if Chris specifically reiterated that point, but I thought it would.
Excellent. Thanks, Todd.
At this point, I'd like to just open it up to Buildforge clients that are on the call. Is there anybody that would like to pose a scenario or question with regards to or concern with regards to Buildforge migrations / integrations?
Hi, this is Jeremy with State Farm, and I know Chris is probably tired of hearing my name, but I have another question related to LDAP. So right now, we haven't really discussed this too much, so right now we just did a config data migration. So we're looking at enabling an LDAP, but we have a fairly complicated group structure here, and so I want to see what we can do. So if we're enabling LDAP and not trying to do all the group mappings, what can we do instead of having, so I know if you log in, instead of in Buildforge, you log in, it's going to give you whatever default group access is. How can we map over our groups currently so that we'll be using user, you know, LDAP for user authentication, but still using group mapping in Buildforge?
Well, LDAP gives you the option to do an either or. You don't have to do group mapping every time a user logs in, or you can do group mapping any time a user logs in. You have that choice.
Okay. So, Chris, I guess the issue is I'm saying is that after we've done the data migration, the users exist in Buildforge currently. And from the testing that we've done, even if they're enabled in LDAP, it's not able to read that user. So I was thinking that I would authenticate against LDAP first. It works fine if it's a brand new user, it's never logged in. It seems to be fine setting the default group.
Right.
If I delete the user and we've set up a group mapping, it seems to authenticate correctly as well. I'm trying to find how do I bridge this between the user existing in BuildForge and now we want to LDAP enable them so that they inherit their group.
Well, our LDAP integration is pretty loose. If the user exists in BuildForge, you've pretty much made the decision and the choice to never have that particular user be LDAP enabled. If they log in through LDAP, you've pretty much made the choice to never have that user be localized to BuildForge enabled, as it were. So it's one or the other. If that user exists, they simply have to be deleted for an LDAP user with the same login to work.
Okay.
So you're saying that we can't migrate if we want to use LDAP. Is that right, Chris?
I don't know if you heard that question.
I'll repeat it.
So basically, we can't migrate the users if we want to use LDAP.
When we're talking about migrating users, we're talking about local BuildForge accounts, right? We're not talking about previous LDAP accounts?
Yes, this is – so right now we're previous version, since we are using 7.01, we did not want to enable LDAP due to other issues at that point. So it seems like the integration is better for LDAP now.
Right.
We want to move forward with LDAP.
Right.
So we have a highly complex group structure. It's an enterprise-wide application.
And 400-plus users in our system, which from what I'm hearing, you're saying that we have to not migrate them and then have them all re-add themselves into BuildForge by logging in, but then how do they get their groups?
At that point, you would have to manually adjust their group structure or their group memberships. That's ultimately the reason we put in this group mapping change in 7.1, 7.1.1, so on and so forth, so that it does it every time you log in. Even with complex group structures in LDAP, it's fairly simple to map a group in LDAP over to a group in BuildForge.
And I understand from the documentation it's simple to do, but we have 900 groups now, right now, at State Farm, 900-plus groups, and 400 users, so getting all these groups created is time-consuming.
Well, it doesn't have to be a one-to-one relationship, LDAP groups to BuildForge groups. You could have multiple LDAP groups go into the same BuildForge group.
I understand that. I'm just, your documentation, and I just reread it, does not say that old users will have to be re-added. It merely says that when a user logs into LDAP for the first time, all their stuff will be created.
Okay.
It doesn't mention anything about migrating old users not working.
I think, at this point, I don't know if we want to. We'd probably take this offline, and this might be something we can discuss further, but I want to hold up for other people.
I think.
Kind of see where this is going.
Yeah, that's fine. You might ask me to carry on this conversation, but offline. So I would have if another client that does have another question or concern in regards to or experience with that, in regards to support the race.
Oh, no, sorry. We were getting a lot of line static, and we didn't know if the call dropped. Please continue.
So I'll repeat the question again. Is there any other additional clients on the call that would like to share or pose a question with regards to their experience with migrations and installations with BuildForge?
Yeah, this is Eric Anderson with Adobe Systems. One of the things that I've run into, especially going from 7 to 7.1, was a lot of the grant permissions, at least were documented in the installation documentation, wasn't quite right. If I followed the directions directly as they were stated, I'd wind up with getting permissions errors and all kinds of things as I'm migrating the database. And I actually worked with Chris on this at the time, and it turns out you have to add some additional grants to both databases and be pretty liberal with just basically just opening it up completely to the build accounts, a little more so than is documented. And I haven't looked at the 711 documentation yet, but I wasn't sure if that's been addressed or updated because, like I said, if you just follow the directions exactly as they are in the documentation, and I'm referring to MySQL databases, it would fail on you.
Hi, this is Heath Malmstrom. I'm one of the authors of the migration stuff. So basically, the MySQL database, the documentation for it was missing an additional grant, and I believe that is now it is at least a doc bug.
Okay,
I'm not 100% sure if it's been corrected yet, but I believe it should be. And will be in the future. So,
okay, excellent. Just wanted to be sure it was caught.
Yeah.
And I know one of the things I ended up doing, because we have quite a few different servers, is I ended up just creating a staging server where I would copy an existing 7.0 database to it and do the migration on that particular server, and then when the migration was successful, I could then take that migrated database and put it on the production system, so that way I could minimize downtime. And that kind of thing, and that found to be really helpful.
Cool.
And the bonus on that is you don't need to install BuildForge fully. You could literally just copy the 7.0 install tree and the 7.1 install tree and just do that. So that was helpful as well.
All right. Thank you for the question, Eric. Anybody else?
Yeah, this is Jeremy from State Farm again. I don't want to monopolize the time. I want to see if there's anybody else out there who's upgrading from a pretty old version, like going from 0.1 to 7.1.1. Anybody started the data migration piece? Because we've had some very interesting things happen. I want to see if anybody else has experienced that as well.
This is Eric with Adobe again. We actually are migrating lots of databases from 3.8 even, so pre-7. And most of the stuff we're doing is we're migrating from 3.8 to 7.02, IFIX 4. And then from there, then we have to migrate to 7.1. And so there's a whole bunch of different issues going from 3.8 to 7.0 in the first place. But when we do go to 7.0, we do take it to 7.02 IFIX 4 before we even try to get it to the 7.1 world. So I don't know if that helps you or not. But.
A little bit. Actually, I think you, so from 7, so the new process, basically, when you're doing the upgrade, you have to create a BF scratch schema that copies over the data and then it upgrades the schema for you. So I think at least we don't have to follow the steps that it's even worse for you. But we've been encountering using DB2. There are a lot of issues related to duplicate IDs, things that BuildForge doesn't allow for now, but it's causing us a lot of pain when trying to do data migration. And I think Chris could probably speak a little bit to that as well. Just want to see if there's anybody else specifically, like from 701, who's been able to follow basically the basic steps straight through without any problems.
This is Eric one more time. And we did run into a bunch of those duplicate IDs, and the hard part of it is I literally just had to go into the database directly and eliminate them, or else I was just kind of dead in the water.
I think, sir, that is helpful, because we encountered a lot of the same things. So we're basically right now, what Chris was saying about doing a dry run, we've actually been migrating different environments. We have a dev and simprod. But we're actually taking a copy of our production data and copying over to our dev environment to go ahead and get a hold of any of the duplicate IDs so we can clean that out now and have the SQL statements ready to go. So.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we had to do, too, and that's precisely why I ended up setting up a staging server, just because we'd run into these kind of weird things, and you just couldn't afford to have production down that long.
Hi, this is Heath Lundstrom again. I have seen the DB2 issue. Actually, we fixed that, and it will be going into the 7111 line. I don't think they'll see the specific issue that you saw unless they have a DB2 database. The other customers and are coming from a 7.0 pre 7.0.0.3, I believe, is what the version was. The issue is basically it was adding an index that was already going to be there because of the upgrade. The additional constraints that we have in the new database, one of the tricky things with migration in general was we're trying to avoid a lot of the issues we used to have in the past with data problems. So if we have a bug in the past product that duplicated data, say, migrating that bug becomes problematic, or migrating that data becomes problematic. And then we found that there was quite a few issues with those kind of things, and that they're just difficult problems to handle. So if you have that kind of data in your database, you're going to hit those kind of, hey, I have to resolve this in certain areas. We do a lot of cleanup for you in areas we can, but in areas where either we just didn't catch that there was duplication commonly out there in our customer data sets we have, or we just didn't catch it, right? Those are generally past data bugs we have to clean up. So in the areas we just we had to make a hard decision and we have no knowledge into it, unfortunately, those are the ones where you're kind of stopped and have to actually take a manual intervention.
Just on a side question, is there a issue of migrating from 7.0.2 IFIX 3, 4, 5 to what's going to be the 7.1.1.1 release, or do we have to do an interim migration in between there?
I don't quite follow. Are you asking if you can migrate from 7.0.2 IFIX 3 to 7.1.1.1?
Right. Whatever the new release that's going to hit, hopefully, you know, whatever the next dot fix is for 7.1. I guess
dot fixes of 7.1 you can migrate directly to.
Okay.
After that, you will have to take the interim step to migrate to that and then upgrade to the newer version.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? And the reasoning behind that is every time we alter our schema, we would then have to be maintaining a huge migration for every minor release.
Right.
And you can see where that would kind of get in the way of things.
Oh, absolutely. The reason why I ask is because, for instance, in the documentation it talks about there's a different path you have to take if you're using, say, IFIX 2 versus IFIX 3. So what I wasn't clear on is if the 7.1 IFIXes will have something similar where we have to go to the GM 7.1 before we can migrate to the IFIXes.
I see.
But you did answer it, so thank you.
Sure.
Any other questions from clients on the phones? Shared experiences, potential concerns.
Actually, I have another question. This is Jeremy from State Farm. See, has anybody else experienced any data inheritance or actually group inheritance issues after doing a migration? it appears that some of the methods that were used in the earlier versions have actually changed in the new version, so it's not actually the same. And wonder anybody else has experienced problems with that?
Well, it sounds like the answer is no, but I don't know if anybody on the engineering team or in support here has any comment on that question.
This is Heath again. I'm not 100%. By group inheritance, you mean access groups?
Yeah, user and subgroups.
Okay. I'm not aware. I don't remember any offhand, but there may have been several months ago fixes that I don't remember. But offhand, I don't recall any. What exactly was the issue? Was it just that grouping wasn't preserved, or like the groups weren't correct?
Yeah. So we have, there are a lot of different groups set up here. We have a different structure. So basically, we were seeing the fact that if you're a member of a subgroup, and the project was owned by the higher level group, even though it looked like you could run the project, you actually couldn't. It would give you a permission error.
Hmm.
So we would remove the subgroups and re-add them.
And the user was not picking up any indirect groups.
Yeah.
So. Oh. Okay. Okay. What version were you migrating to?
We just went to, we got a hold of the 307 spin.
307. That's pre-GA, right? Or is it?
No, that's the latest. We just got that Robert Haig about a week
ago. Oh, I got you. Okay, I see what you're saying. Okay, so that should be current. I'm not aware of any, but I can certainly look into it. I can do some testing around that. That would be good.
And so what we've done right now to get around this is basically using the Java API. This is just go through the list of groups that we have, remove all subgroups, and re-add them. And that seems to be working for the time being.
Hmm. So the hierarchy is preserved, but you just can't actually run, visually when you go in the UI, the grouping looks correct, but you don't actually have the permission. Is that right?
Yes. So let's say visually everything looks correct, but obviously there's something that's taking place that doesn't look like the data migration that actually validating correctly.
I got you. Okay. I will definitely look into that.
Great. Thank you.
Do you want to give them the PMR number?
We do have. We've been working a part of this data inheritance. We have a PMR already open on that, but I don't know if you've been involved in it.
I may not have yet. It's probably. I probably will be shortly.
Yeah. Does anybody have that PMR handy by any chance?
I can get it really quickly.
If not, that's okay. We can certainly look it up on our end.
Yep.
All right. Well, moving on. Any additional questions, concerns, comments, experiences from anybody? Sounds like we might have exhausted the number of questions and things we can talk about on this particular call. I think at this point in time, I'll now defer to Tim, if he's on the line, to wrap up this call with a closing question, I believe.
Yes. Give me just one moment.
Sure.
Okay, we do have a question for you. We're wanting to know how useful the call was. Not right now, but I will prompt you when to do so. But to answer the question, how useful did you find the open mic call? Star 1, very useful. Star 2, somewhat useful. Star 3, not useful. One moment while I set it up, and I'll prompt you when you can press your option.
And while Tim is doing that, I'd just like to take a moment to thank everybody that joined the call. From a support perspective, we find these sessions very useful, and we hope to do more in the future.
Great, and you may vote now. Again, if you would like to vote, star 1, very useful, star 2, somewhat useful, star 3, not useful. Okay, last call for answering the question. Okay, the poll is now closed.
Okay, again, thank you all for participating on this call, and we look forward to future sessions.
All right, thank you.
Take care.